Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are here with Franz de Waal, and you have in this compound not only chimpanzees and monkeys, you also have bonobos here. And you've
Before you do that, I mean, just to go back, primates also look after weak, afflicted, those that are not able to fully participate. I mean, that's not to say they do it all the time, but it does. There are lots of examples of that happening, aren't there?
Yeah, well, the first thing that happens
I guess what I'm saying, this is not an unnatural act.
No.
To take care of the weak in the community?
No, there used to be, of course, the image that anyone who's not fit will not survive, and if they do survive, we will eliminate them or something like that. And that's the natural way of handling things. There's this famous monkey in Japan who has no hands and no feet and has to crawl over the ground while all her groupmates travel through the canopy, and this is in the area where in the 6 months a year there's snow on the ground, and so she has a very hard life. She has raised 5 kids that way. She's now 25 years old. Her name is Mozu, and she's tolerated by the group. I can't say she has been taken care of by the group, but at least she's tolerated, and she's certainly not eliminated by them. And there's similar stories. There's also stories of handicapped individuals who receive extra care. I cannot say it's done to the degree that we would do it, but certainly it's not always the case that individuals who are handicapped are eliminated.
And I would also assume you see more of that in the social primates, the ones that the chimpanzees, the bonobo, where there is a stronger sense of community, a stronger sharing in terms of sharing food and...
Yeah, that's stronger in those species, yeah.
Okay, bonobos.
Yeah.
Now, bonobos. Make love, not war, you say. Tell me about the bonobos. Tell me about sex.
So what is different in bonobos compared to the chimps is two things. One is it's a female-ruled society. So it's the chimp is clearly a male-dominated society. The bonobo is more peaceful. Females dominate males. And the sex part is, of course, that bonobos resolve a lot of the issues that chimps resolve by kissing and embracing and fairly superficial sort of body contacts. The bonobos do with very intensive sexual contacts among them.
Aren't the bonobos real close to humans in much of their anatomy and physiology and maybe some of the emotional stuff too?
Some people consider bonobos more similar to the common ancestor, and certainly in terms of the anatomy, there's an argument to be made for that. But that whole issue is unresolved. Basically, I would say they're equidistant, which means equally far or close from us as the chimpanzee.
To the common ancestor?
To us.
I see. Well, the bonobos are a curious phenomenon because it's, to me at least, as the uninformed person, it's a new way of thinking about chimps, about other primates. Always it has been, well, men, the male of the species is big and it's dominant, and matriarchies are an aberration, and somebody just thought it up and it was a bad idea, and men are supposed to rule the world. And the feminist arguments to the contrary are sort of contrary to the natural order. So how'd I do? Have I picked a lot of fights here?
Yeah, well, the bonobo throws that all in a very different perspective. And we didn't know until quite recently that females were so dominant and central in bonobo society. But that's clearly the picture that's emerging. And since the bonobo is equally close to us as the chimpanzee, it cannot just be ignored as some aberrant exotic species. It is a highly relevant species. And the bonobo females do this, by the way, not by being big and strong. The bonobo females bond among themselves, have a lot of sex among themselves, and they translate that in what we call alliances, in the sense that they can gang up on males. The males are bigger and stronger, but don't have anything nearly the male bonding that, let's say, chimpanzees or human males have, and so they're not solidary with each other. They don't help each other, and that's the way the females are able to dominate them.
So at the very least, you're saying there are lots of models for how to be an ape, including
It shows that there's much greater flexibility than people used to assume.
So it's not just you got to be this way or that way, or you're wrong, you're immoral, you're outside of nature, and you have to be this way because I say so, and it's.
Well, another issue talking about moral is, of course, that the moralizers among us have depicted sex as something that's intended for reproduction and shouldn't be used for anything else.
That's not the case with the bonobos, then, at all.
Certainly not. I would say in a bonobo, like 75% of what's going on sexually has nothing to do with reproduction. There's a lot of male-male sex, female-female sex. There's a lot of sex outside the fertile period. Certainly, and of course, the variety of sex is also very impressive. So we have a very sexy relative.
Clearly,
which
they
may not
didn't
be
have.
Accidental.
They didn't have. They didn't have John Calvin come along about 300 years ago and tell them that they shouldn't do that, huh? The Calvinist strain in the English-speaking world is fairly strong, and I hear you say this. Oh my goodness! You know, people's eyes are just going to pop when you say that there's a sexy neighbor, and they are very close to us as a species.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one way. Not necessarily the only way, but that is one way. In roughly comparable environments, the chimpanzees and the bonobos have adapted in substantially different ways.
Yeah, they're roughly comparable. We think that the bonobos have a somewhat different forest environment in the sense that they don't need to hunt. They have a lot of plant species that provide a lot of protein. So hunting is basically absent, and their environment is also richer in food, it seems, than in chimpanzees.
So they don't fight about it.
Well, they can travel in bigger parties, and that makes it possible for females to bond and to have alliances, because the female chimps, in the field at least, need to disperse to get enough food.
Well, and in a materially, what it sounds like, in a materially prosperous environment, that the bonobo is at least the direction that the that has occurred in that environment. And since we live in a materially abundant environment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see the connection here. Yeah, yeah.
Give me a 30-second plug for the bonobos whose very species existence is threatened.
Oh, the bonobos, especially nowadays, they live in Zaire. And
now known as the Congo again.
Yeah, now it's again the Congo. So they live in Zaire, which is a huge place, but the political instability also endangers the bonobos, let's say it that way.
We regularly talk about the time of great change in which we live and how the future is truly being shaped right now, which may always have been the case, but it just seems to be more stuff is happening faster in more domains that humans touch and that humans don't touch. Do you see that kind of blossoming in primate research?
You mean a major change in primate? Well, the main change that we have is a change in perspective on cognition. We used to talk about primates and all animals as a sort of machines, you know. And now, of course, more and more people are interested in the feelings and thoughts. Not that we can get any handle on that, but we speculate about them a lot. And so there's a lot of interest in primate cognition. And as a result, we have become less, let's say, worried about anthropomorphism. Mm-hmm. So we describe them in a little bit freer terms than we used to. That's the main change in my field.
Mm-hmm. Does this begin to touch other fields? We talked before we began about how an awful lot of what you see could be translated directly into a corporate environment. Are there things that we can begin to learn from this?
Oh, I think there's a lot of connections. I go to a lot of meetings where there are, for example, economists interested now in, let's say, basic human psychology and human nature, which translates also in an interest in primates, professors of law, conflict resolution programs, people who study charity, stuff like that. There's a blossoming of interest basically in issues of evolution and trying to trace where we come from and how we got the tendencies that we have. And I think evolution is basically, at some point, evolutionary issues are going to take over the social sciences, and that's already happening to some degree. There's a lot of social scientists who don't see it coming and don't want to see it coming, I suppose. Evolutionary psychology, evolutionary psychiatry, evolutionary medicine, it's all there, and it's going to be very important, I think.
We have talked to several people. I've been struck in the last few months how many people have gone back to Darwin and re-understood Darwin. Is that what you're talking about? Just
as if the Darwinian revolution is happening right now. Of course,
it only took 150 years to get there.
Of course, it started happening in the mid 70s, as far as biology.
1970s or 1870s?
No, the mid 1970s, when social biology came up. It was a very simplified version, and that's why it raised a lot of hackles. But still, that's probably where it got started.
Well, as you talk about better understanding where we've come from, does that also better help us better understand where we're going?
That I don't know. That's, you know, that's a bit of a stretch, where we're going as a society.
Which, of course, we cannot know until it happens.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the chance to say, okay, here are the three things that I have learned that can help us move forward, or the two things you pick, are you willing to make that kind of generalizations about what we know from the primates that can help us be better people? I know that that's very judgmental, but I'm still curious to know your answer.
To be better people. Well, I think it would have to do something to do with sense of community and connectedness, which is often missing in Western societies. Emphasize individualism so much, and this society even more than any other. I'm not from here. I'm a European, and Europeans, at least continental Europeans, always have a little bit more socialist type perspective. Mm-hmm. We always believe more in government and what the government can do for you than Americans. And I'm not saying that that one system is better than the other, because I see a lot of flaws also in European countries and the welfare systems that exist there. But some sort of middle road could be possible, and maybe that's the way things will be going.
This has been wonderful. Thank you for the sound effects provided by an entire colony of chimpanzees here at the Yerkes Primate Research Center. Bill Russell and I have been with Franz de Waal. This is wonderful. I hope you will keep up the rest of your lifetime with this splendid work. Professor de Waal writes eloquently about the origins of right and wrong in humans and other animals in his book Good Natured, published by Harvard University Press. He's also just published Bonobo, the Forgotten Ape, working with photographer Franz Lanting. The Bonobo book is published by the University of California Press. Franz de Waal, an extraordinary man doing extraordinary work. We thank you, Professor de Waal. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.